Nuclear tax. That's what we all pay, whether we are aware of it or want to or not. That's the amount of our taxes that go for nukes. And in 2026, the average in this country, the United States, is $401.51 for every man, woman, child, and even infant in this country. That's for new nukes and their infrastructure. Mining, manufacturing, deploying, reprocessing, maintaining, and getting ready to launch Armageddon-level nuclear weapons. Our tax dollars at work, but not for our long-term well-being. And that's not even for cleanup of toxic radioactive waste, but to build the mechanisms of nuclear proliferation. We don't usually hear about this because it's not sexy, like the big boom and blast of nuclear weapons. And the government obscures the data and makes it easy for us to not be able to access the information, crunch the numbers, and come up with the jaw-dropping figure that reveals our individual and collective contributions to the possibility of nuclear Armageddon. So when you hear a physician who is a veteran leader in Physicians for Social Responsibility tell you,
for a family of four with that same kind of average income, that's $1,606 this year, $1,606 for nuclear weapons programs, not to educate their children, not for healthcare. And again, the interesting thing, not for our current war in Iran, again, for strictly nuclear weapons programs, $1,606. And if you make more than that, you pay it multiples more.
And what does that add up to? Hold on to your hats. It's over $137 billion with a B dollars on nuclear weapons program, and that's for just 1 year, 2026. Well, when Dr. Robert Dodge, a veteran leader at Physicians for Social Responsibility, crunches the numbers, provides the footnotes, and reveals where your tax dollars are actually going, whether you want them there or not, that sinking feeling in your gut is your visceral understanding of just how awful, deadly, and dangerous it is to be in that seat that we all share.
Nuclear hot seat. What are those people thinking? Nuclear hot seat. What have those boys been drinking? Nuclear hot seat. The corium is sinking. Our time to act is shrinking, but our activists are linking. Nuclear hot seat. It's the bomb.
Welcome to Nuclear Hot Seat, the weekly international news magazine keeping you up to date on all things nuclear from a different perspective. We're a show for people who know nothing about nuclear who would like to know something, and people who know something about nuclear who would like to know just a little bit more. My name is Libby Halevi. I am the producer and host, as well as a survivor of the nuclear accident at Three Mile Island from just 1 mile away. So I know what can happen when those nuclear so-called experts get it wrong. This week, we talk with Dr. Robert Dodge, a 40-year veteran of Physicians for Social Responsibility, who sits on the boards of directors as co-chair of the Nuclear Weapons Abolition Committee, the board of PSR Los Angeles, and the Nuclear Age Peace Foundation. He leads PSR Los Angeles's Nuclear Weapons Community Costs Program, which quantifies the individual and community tax burden of U.S. nuclear weapons spending on an annual basis. And that's what we'll be talking about today. Then we'll hear from physicist Linda Williams with information on the Nuclear Regulatory Commission's recent moves to gut its requirements for safety and public input to new nuclear reactors. And she provides immediately usable information on how to comment on your opposition to these rule changes before it's too late. And it may be too late quickly because deadlines are coming up fast. So let's move into action. We will also have nuclear news from around the world, numbnuts of the week for outstanding nuclear boneheadedness, and lots more honest and verified nuclear information. All of it coming up in just a few moments. Today is Tuesday, April 28, 2026, and here is this week's nuclear news from a different perspective. Here's this week's featured interview. How much are nukes really costing us? The answer is astounding, and it's updated every year by Physicians for Social Responsibility, which provides that answer, which is created by long-term veteran member and board member Dr. Robert Dodge. Bob's latest numbers for 2026 were released on April 15, tax day, as is appropriate for tracking the outrageous financial nuclear tax burden placed on every woman, man, child, and even infant in this country. Where does all that money go? As I said before, sit back and fasten your seatbelts, and you're about to find out. I spoke with Dr. Robert Dodge of Physicians for Social Responsibility on April 26, 2026. Dr. Robert Dodge, thank you so much for being my guest this week on Nuclear Hot Seat.
Thank you, Libby. I appreciate it so much.
For those listeners who might not be aware, what is Physicians for Social Responsibility and what does the group do?
Physicians for Social Responsibility is the American affiliate of a large organization called the International Physicians for the Prevention of Nuclear War. Founded roughly about 1962, after at that time, former Soviet physicians and American physicians identified a radioisotope called strontium-90 in human baby teeth. Strontium 90, which to the body looks like calcium, is then incorporated into calcium structures such as teeth and bone. It is not a naturally occurring radioisotope. It only occurs from nuclear explosions. So that identification, we realized that that was happening from atmospheric testing that was at that time going on by the former Soviet Union in the United States. So that led in pretty short order to the United States and the Soviet Union developing what was called the Limited Test Ban Treaty. All former atmospheric testing then went underground, okay, because it was that atmospheric exposure of the radioisotope that spread across the planet. And for interest's sake, the strontium-90, again, looking like calcium to the body, it goes on to emit for years thereafter and was certainly an increased risk for childhood cancers, primarily leukemias. So that was where we started our organization. From that point forth, both the international and the national group have been looked at as sort of the go-to for the public health effects of nuclear explosions, nuclear war, and we've been advocating for the abolition of those weapons ever since. For our work at that time, we were ultimately given the Nobel Peace Prize in 1985. And so that was very key. Then in 2007, I mean, again, and I've been involved with this for over 40 years, but I'm a primary care physician working in the office all day. And so there's only so much ability to speak out to try to educate the population, the public. So, but we did that for years and years. And finally in 2007, our international organization helped fund the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons, ICAN. So we actually started that to bring in civil society to help us sort of to get the word out. And so ICAN, over the next 10 years, was working, lobbying, and ultimately came forth with the Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons in 2017, which is where I am pleased to say we got our second Nobel Peace Prize, because now nuclear weapons, like every other weapon of mass destruction, is now illegal under international law. Unfortunately, it doesn't mean they don't exist, but they are illegal to have, to possess, to develop, to transfer, to threaten to use. It's all illegal under this treaty, which is growing around the world.
Does someone have to be a physician or allied with the medical professions to be a member of PSR?
No, and that's absolutely a great point. And no, that is not necessary. Anybody who supports the concept, we invite them to join us. I'm the immediate past president of the Los Angeles chapter, which is the largest chapter in the nation and probably has the largest nuclear weapons abolition team. So we invite them, whether to join us at national level or in Los Angeles. We also in Los Angeles are the fiscal sponsor and leading organization for a national movement in the United States called Back from the Brink. That falls under our, and that's the largest growing nuclear abolition effort movement in the United States.
If someone wants to get in touch with Back from the Brink, do they do it through PSR or can they do that more directly?
They can go directly to Back from the Brink, and our online presence is preventnuclearwar.org. And just to give you I always say, like ICAN, the international campaign here in the United States, Back from the Brink, we have over 504 organizations endorsing, every major religious, every major environmental, every major health, nursing, and equity organization has endorsed. We have 78 cities and counties across the nation. We have 8 state legislative bodies, which I'm proud to say that California, on a bicameral, both the Senate and the Assembly, endorsed it. So 8 across the nation. We have over 592 elected officials across the nation and 68 members of Congress. We now have a bicameral in the U.S. Senate and House, a resolution, which is a Back from the Brink resolution, calling for the U.S. to lead an effort to abolish nuclear weapons. And while that's happening, to actually have 4 precautionary principles, such as taking our weapons off high trigger alert, removing any president, including this sitting president, from the ability to launch, as the sole person who can launch, taking our weapons off high trigger alert, and finally, canceling the rebuild of our entire nuclear weapons arsenals with enhanced weapons at the cost of some $1.5 trillion. So that's sort of the Back from the Brink program. But we call ourselves Communities United to Abolish Nuclear Weapons. And so we really encourage people to join us at preventnuclearwar.org.
I will, of course, have links to all of that up on the website for this episode. You mentioned the money, and that's what I want to focus on here, because every year, and this is the 37th year, Physicians for Social Responsibility, or PSR, as we will be referring to it, tracks how much our country spends on nuclear weapons programs. What has been your involvement in this project, and what is its importance to your overall goals?
As I mentioned, I've been involved in nuclear weapons abolition for over 40 years, and I've lectured, spoken to the humanitarian and health aspects. I hate to use the adage, it's a little bit like throwing mud against the wall. Whatever sticks and whatever gets traction with people. So we've gone from obviously the health impact to the humanitarian impact to the moral impact to the financial impact. Okay. So looking at the financial aspect, I actually am the one who developed the Nuclear Weapons Cost Project 37 years ago. We call it the United States Nuclear Weapons Community Cost Project. And, all communities have fiscal needs that go unmet, that the population is clamoring for. And so we tried to say, what are the costs we're spending on nuclear weapons compared with what we're spending on, I don't care, senior outreach programs, school lunch programs, whatever. So we identify what our communities and nation as a whole are spending on all nuclear weapons programs. So this program, I actually started 37 years ago. At that time, there was a discussion. We were coming toward the end of the Cold War, and there was discussion about economic conversion. Okay, you have an army base in your community, but boy, it's threatened. If we close that, we're going to lose jobs, we're going to lose monies. And so I'm like, well, what are we actually spending on nuclear weapons compared with what we're getting into our community to have an army base? And it was very interesting at that time, because there were many communities where the amount the community was actually spending on nuclear weapons programs, not the entire military, not the defense budget, but nuclear weapons programs alone, was more than they were getting in terms of a boost to their economies locally. So we were really trying to identify that and just empower everybody, empower communities to say, okay, well, this is what we're spending, but are these really our priorities? And again, I always use the phrase, budgets are moral documents. They tell us who we are as an individual, as a community, as a nation. And so if we say, okay, look what we're spending on nuclear weapons versus how many people have no health care, how many people don't have access to clean water, clean air because of the, in those days, coal plant or whatever might be the polluter in their environment. So this was to really draw the comparison. And so it's been a wonderful journey, because I've often found it to be a bridge, even if you will, across the aisle, because I don't care if you're a Democrat or Republican in Congress, you have your basically pet projects that you want to see funded. And when I say, okay, Congresswoman Libby, here's what you're spending on nuclear weapons, what's your big project? And they, holy cow. I mean, most people either side of the aisle traditionally has realized we can't use these weapons. If we use them, that's the ball game. Or if one gets used accidentally or by intent, that ensues the possibility of a nuclear war.
How did you and how do you come up with these numbers? What is your source for it?
Thank you. This is truly a labor of love. This is not a simple project. It takes me weeks kind of teasing it out over the years. And this has been for all the years because you can't look at the United States approved budget and there's no line item that says nuclear weapons, okay? And I think that is by intent because, you know, if we all realized what we're spending, how much of our treasure goes towards weapons that threaten everything we care about, I think there'd be a larger voice about, you know, speaking up saying, no, this is not in our best interest. So it comes under, obviously, there's the Department of Defense. It's also heavily funded under the Department of Energy because the Department of Energy controls all of our actual weapons, the bombs and the bullets, if you will. That's under the Department of Energy. Then in recent years, with Trump, we've gotten now Space Force. This year, which saw among our biggest increase this year over last was funding for the Golden Space Dome, the Golden Dome, which I prefer to call the Golden Sieve. That saw a massive increase in funding this year. So it's all these various shells that it gets hidden under. And so I've always tried to really put my numbers out and verify each number. I always have, you know, where's the reference? Where do I find it? And the like. I also, just for reference, I do include the environmental legacy of nuclear weapons, because if we didn't have them, hadn't developed them, didn't test them, we wouldn't have so much environmental legacy, contamination, health projects, and health issues for our communities. So I include that. And I'm always upfront. I say, listen, if we spent the entire budget on just trying to clean up our nuclear legacy, I'd be in favor of that, but that's fine. But the largest extent is for the development, the testing, the missile dome, et cetera. So that's where the main is to the actual weapons and prevention there.
There's something that you don't include in this, which is the U.S. intelligence black budget. What is that, and why didn't you include it?
Well, again, as I'm mentioning, these were not very transparent. So it's interesting. So back, I believe in 2013, Snowden had released, he actually made public the US, if you will, black budget, which is a hidden budget. Only congressional members are aware. It's not put out for public and what it's used for. And at the time, my recollection was it was roughly about 10% of that was felt to be for nuclear weapons programs, very high, top secret nuclear weapons programs. Since then, it's no longer available. You can actually calculate a number. You can actually look up black budget and they've got it under, you know, various departments, but there's no disposition of how those dollars are spent. So I don't include those because I can't verify, but my own sense, knowing how this effort has gone over the 37 years on something like this, if they're spending a certain amount in 2013, a certain percentage, my expectation is they're probably spending a similar percentage right now.
So you can hypothesize, but you don't include it because you
That's right.
can't verify.
Exactly right.
So, considering the verifiable numbers, what does this most recent report show, and what is the period of time it covers?
I always present this on tax day. So, in my community, I live in Ojai, California. I practiced for 45 years in Ventura. And so, I used to present to our board of supervisors, to our mayors, a giant check on tax day, because that's officially when we fund our budget for the year. So, tax day, April 15th, is my usual release, as we did this year. And it funds fiscal year 2026. Okay, we're funding with its last year's taxes. That's what we pay 2025, but it funds this year's budget. So this year, for fiscal year 2026, the United States total was $137.23 billion, 137.23, which was about a 24% increase year over year from last year, primarily due to the Golden Dome and also to defense nuclear projects, okay, in the Department of Defense. What does that break down to? Well, again, by our population across the United States, if everybody paid the same, and that's every man, woman, child, newborn, okay, you know, born today, their cost is $401.51, $451.51 for every man, woman, child. And that's for an average income, though, of $44,673. So that's the average income across the entire country. Now, some people make that, some people make less, but many of us make many times more than that. So our donation is much higher. So, but for every $44,000 of income, you're paying $401 for nuclear tax.
That's a stunning amount of money.
It's a stunning amount. And to give two other figures, because I always try to figure out what people can relate to. First of all, for a family of four with that same kind of average income, that's $1,606 this year. $1,606 for nuclear weapons programs, not to educate their children, not for healthcare, not, and again, the interesting thing, not for our current war in Iran, again, for strictly nuclear weapons programs. $1,606. And again, if you make more than that, you pay multiples more.
You had other ways of breaking down these numbers, some of which were a bit opaque to me. Can you explain what these other breakdowns are in case people might be interested in them?
I'll give one other figure. I did a presentation for the state of New Hampshire last week and the state of Washington the week before that. But just to put these numbers also on a national perspective, that's over $261,000 a minute that our country spends on nuclear weapons programs. $261,000 a minute. So what I use, if people look on our website, so it's both under PreventNuclearWar.org for back from the brink. But when I started doing this, I did this with PSR Los Angeles. So we're sort of the archiver, but I mean, you can find it on either site. But if you look, it'll have the figure for the country, the population, the per capita income, the per capita nuclear tax, PCNT, that's that $401. Then what I have is because some communities are very wealthy. They make twice that. Instead of making, $44,000, their average income, say in Palo Alto, is 88. So I have a nuclear tax multiplier. So theirs is 2.0 or 1.9. And then I calculate with their population, so they have a much higher percentage, if you will. So I include in my report the richest city. So the richest city in the nation is New York City. It's actually is richer, a number of billionaires and whatever. So it's their expenditure is over $3.95 billion, okay, for the city of New York. Okay. So that's just the city. The poorest city in the nation is Flint, Michigan. And you remember in years past, we had the lead leakage into the pipes and things like this, and the toxification for children drinking the municipal water. So it's the poorest city in the nation, and they're spending over $15.5 million in the poorest city. I also try to look at, if you will, native population. So the Navajo Nation, which actually touches on four states in the Southwest, is spending over $28.4 million. Okay. And this is a community that over the years, that's where we mine uranium. And so we've left devastation for the citizens there. It's where we propose to potentially restore it now so it can intoxify forever and pollute their aquifers. So we look at how do we treat community. And so much of the legacy, if you will, or trail of nuclear weapons from its mining to processing to development occurs in indigenous communities and communities of color, okay, sort of a us and them. So this is why I try to include some of these communities as well.
We'll return with the second half of our interview with Physicians for Social Responsibility's Dr. Robert Dodge in just a moment. But first, it's endless, isn't it? Nuclear betrayals, be they weapons, manufacturing, uranium mining, radioactive waste, destinations for our tax dollars. The deck is stacked against people, the planet, life on Earth. And it's amazing how all-pervasive the nuclear compromises to our future are. Can one person, one podcast, really make a difference? Only one way to find out, and that's to keep Nuclear Hot Seat going. Since June 14, 2011, only 3 months after the Fukushima disaster began, Nuclear Hot Seat has been covering nuclear issues, an hour of information every week. We do our best to provide only verifiable stories, interview genuine experts, and come up with actionable steps that any one of us can take to help turn this nuclear juggernaut around. Is it daunting? You bet. Is this work effective? Only time will tell. But we must do everything we can while we can and not give up no matter how much money, PR, propaganda, and denigrating bots get thrown at us. The alternative is to guarantee that nothing gets done to prevent accidents, nuclear war, uncontrolled contamination from radioactive waste, the kinds of things that doom humanity to a future of cancer, genetic damage, birth defects, autoimmune diseases, and maybe worse. And that is why you need Nuclear Hot Seat. We here unconditionally support the movement to get rid of nuclear weapons and the nuclear reactors that support them, and the collusive industries that go into their creation. To that end, every week, we call out the nuclear lies and liars through interviews and news stories, while letting you know what frontline activists and movements are doing about their many transgressions. We provide verifiable nuclear news so that you can understand the issues, the manipulations, and what you can do about it. But in order to keep doing this show, help is needed. Nuclear Hot Seat runs solely on donations, and we are always in need of your support. Be it a one-time donation of any amount or a recurring donation of as little as $5 a month, the same as one would spend here in the U.S. for one, count it, one nice cup of coffee, all of it counts towards our monthly nut. Nuclear Hot Seat is a 501c3 nonprofit organization, which means that your donations are tax deductible. Just go to nuclearhotseat.com and click on the red donate button. If you have Zelle, you can send money directly to info@nuclearhotseat.com, and that way no fees are taken out. So don't wait. Go to Nuclear Hot Seat to donate right now, and know that whatever you can do to help, I am deeply grateful that you're listening and that you care. Now, here is part two of our interview with Physician for Social Responsibilities, Dr. Robert Dodge, on how your tax dollars are being spent to support nuclear weapons, and you have absolutely no say in the matter. When we're looking at this outrageous number of $137,230,000,000 in just one tax year for nuclear weapons, what are we getting for that?
What we're getting is we're getting weapons that threaten everything we care about every moment of every single day, weapons that can never be used and never can be used without, I always say, ending the ball game, okay, and ending up with nuclear apocalypse. Just as the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists moved their minute hand ever closer this year to 85 seconds from midnight, the closest it's ever been since the dropping of the bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So again, and they include the threat because of lack of diplomacy, increasing nuclear threat, nuclear development, but they also include climate change and the threat to precious, you know, resources, and which increases conflict, which increases the potential for war, and also what they call disruptive technologies, AI, okay? There was a recent report where they actually, and there's been lots of discussion about, well, let's take the human element out of war making or out of nuclear decision process, okay? Because it's too fraught with, you know, feelings and of this. So let's include AI. Well, a recent study where they put various scenarios of nuclear attack to AI, AI suggested attack launch on every single scenario. So how does that protect us? So that disruptive technology was also included in this year's calculation of the doomsday clock.
This report, then, is a really big deal for people to understand, and especially reporters to understand exactly what the impact is of nuclear proliferation and the amount of money that's being poured on this technology that we can't ever use, but we're expanding anyway, just in case. What kind of media coverage does PSR tend to get when these numbers are released?
It varies year over year. I will say the entire subject of nuclear risk and nuclear war potential has intensified with our current administration. And so we are hopeful that that will get people to understand that we need to speak up, okay? Because the old adage, you know, of silence implies consent. If people don't speak up, speak out, contact their congressional leaders, they think, well, it's not really on their radar. But this year we've gotten a good response. Every year I write an op-ed that gets published somewhere, usually nationally. So we've gotten that and had a good response to that. Again, I've done, it was thus far, two states, and I have another couple coming where I'll be presenting a discussion on their state's community expenditures. And we remain available at all times. But probably the other interesting thing, I mentioned the Back from the Brink. So Back from the Brink, there's resolutions. And I will say in the state of California, my little town of Ojai was the first city to endorse that. I was like, well, I live here. We need to do this. So I went and we had a unanimous city council endorsement of the resolution. I then took to Santa Barbara, who did likewise. We then took it to City of Los Angeles, which at the time became the largest city in the nation, and they unanimously endorsed. So, and then it went to the state, and now we have many cities. But my point will be every one of the resolutions has used the calculation from Chicago to Baltimore to New York City has used the calculation. So that gets it out there more, and that really garners interest when you're presenting it to a board of supervisors, to a city council about this is what our city's spending on this. And, you know, we talk to them because if you're a sitting city council member, you're a first responder. I mean, I'm a first responder as a physician, but you're a first responder too. Your responsibility is the safety and well-being of your community. And what we try to emphasize, there is no response. There is no response to a nuclear attack. The only response to nuclear attack is to prevent it. And the only way to prevent it is to abolish these weapons. So the number really does key in well in that regard. So it gets a lot more kind of under the radar. But if you look at our Back from the Brink site, every resolution through the nation has used the figure. And what happens, the nice thing for me is each year, usually like, well, it's the City Council of Chicago will reach out and say, what's our current figure? What's our current figure? Because they're blown away with what their community is spending.
Is there any way for individual cities or states to say, okay, we're not going to give this amount of money towards nuclear matters and withdraw those funds?
Yeah. So understanding these are the taxpayers, it's the taxpayers of the community as opposed to the cities, not just not in the city budget. But that's a great question and one that's been used about, you know, discretionary or individual choice in terms of taxes. And so there's not a legal way to do that. Okay. But our response, my response is if we get enough of our legislators or our elected officials to understand and it becomes a majority, I think then they're willing to look at because it's the Senate and the House that are passing the funding. If they finally say, listen, a majority of my constituents do not want this funding, I think that's how we do it. So it's a slow slog, but we are making progress. But the hard part, Libby, is again, while you and I talk for this half hour, the pure ability of us to do that is largely because of luck, because nobody's misreading a signal, a cloud burst, whatever. And so it's by luck. And luck is not a security policy. But I mean, if we're fortunate enough not to have some catastrophic event, I think the people will finally ultimately demand this happening.
I've come to believe that one of the reasons that people ignore, pay no attention to the fact that there is an ongoing, never-ending nuclear threat is that they've lost contact with what it means, what it does to people, what it does to their environment. And there's a tool created by Alex Wellerstein. I know you must
Sure.
be aware of it, NukeMap. Is there any coordination between the use of the report that UNPSR comes up with and NukeMap to go, this is what they're putting the money towards. Let's see what this would do to your local community. Because I've done that in presentations where I have shown what the impact of a Hiroshima-sized bomb would do, let alone the ones that we've got now. Has there been any attempt to work that out?
You know, certainly we've worked with him on his project, the Nuke Map. So I'm very well familiar with that. I've used that myself when I've given community presentations about this is what would happen in our community. So the answer is yes, Sarah. There's not really been a coordination in terms of using the economics and that sort of as an overlay. And that's an interesting idea. It would lend itself to, I think, a valuable take. So, but yes, up to this point, we've not. We've worked with Back from the Brink program. We have authored with PSR National, the nuclear famine report, which posits a limited nuclear exchange between India and Pakistan using roughly one half of their arsenals, which is roughly 100 Hiroshima-sized weapons, 100, you know, 50 each. And the immediate devastation loss, like, you know, 20 million people in the local area and things of this. But then the ongoing climate devastation that occurs thereafter, lasting years, which would ultimately, through nuclear famine, a cooling of the planet, kill, it's proposed, up to 2 billion people on the planet from a small, limited war over there, India, Pakistan, using 50 each, 100 weapons. So we've done that sort of climate modeling, which kind of goes beyond the nuke map. So that's we call nuclear famine. And that's been revamped. As with everything in terms of studying nuclear weapons, in my experience, every time they relook at it, the data gets much worse. It's much worse. You know, India and Pakistan have grown, their cities are bigger, their arsenals are stronger. So it's now much worse. And they were on a nuclear war footing last year. Okay. I mean, in the last year, five of the nine nuclear nations were involved in war, and China was threatening Taiwan. So, six of the nine nations were somehow either threatening or involved in actual war. So when we talk about luck is is what's keeping us ahead of the game.
What can concerned individuals do to support the work that you are doing, to support this message and help get it out?
Thank you. So I think the most important thing they can do is every individual can endorse the Back from the Brink campaign as well, just like we mentioned all these hundreds of organizations, but every individual can as well. The other thing is, again, the resolutions I've mentioned, it's called House Resolution 317 in the United States House of Representatives and Senate Resolution 323. So 317 in the House, 323 in the Senate. We can call our congressional people and urge them to endorse this campaign. That's the key, because when they hear from their constituents, they listen. We have now hubs around the nation, Back from the Brink hubs that are working. So you can become involved with your local hub. Again, here in Ojai, we've met with our local bishop and our local mayors to meet with our congressional person to kind of lobby them. So groups come together in these hubs. That's a remarkable way. So among one of the first times in all the years that I've been doing this, it really provides a way for people not just to hear about it and feel concerned, but to become involved. Okay. And involvement is such an important component.
We will, of course, be publishing any links that you have where people can sign up, where they can get the information, where they can include a PDF if they're sending it out to their representative so that they have easy access to it under this episode. Is there anything that we haven't covered here that you think is important for us to know at this time?
2 weeks ago now, we sent a local elected official open letter to every member of Congress and the Senate. There were over 250 local elected officials, from mayors to city council people to heads of the board of supervisors to state legislators, but 250. And we're continuing to build that list. Many, it's interesting. In California, most elected officials were notified. We've been trying to lobby them. They all have full plates. So we're continuing to build that list. Okay. So this again is another thing encouraging even our local level of folks, city council, to endorse this campaign. So that's critical. I think the main topic that has been, I call, the major driver of the arms race is the fallacy in mythologic theory of deterrence. Okay, deterrence. And that's the thing. We need to speak truth to power. Deterrence is an absolute myth. If I have one nuclear weapon and you're my adversary, Libby, you need two. If you have two, I need four. If you have four, I need eight. And now we have to have abilities which breach treaties to make your weapons impotent. Okay. Again, Golden Dome. So if I have that, then I have to figure out a way of getting around that. So my point is, so we must do away and not take at face value. We talk often to our congressional people, well, I'm in favor of deterrence, which means I'm in favor of ramping this arms race up to that every single dollar gets spent there. Deterrence is a myth. It's the greatest driver and puts us at the greatest risk. So that's the other thing that I think really needs to be spoken of whenever we talk about nuclear weapons, nuclear war potential, and arsenal control.
Anything else?
I think you've done a good job. I think we've covered things well. I mentioned as a first responder, and I live in fire-prone California. Okay. And so when the fires come, I watched the Thomas Fire from my backyard as it came through. So we're obligated to report to the hospital if there's evacuations and the like. And again, coming back to, there is no adequate medical or humanitarian response to a nuclear war. The only way to respond is to abolish these weapons, and we must abolish them before they abolish us. So that is critical. We must prevent what we cannot cure. We cannot cure it, so we have to prevent it.
Dr. Robert Dodge, Bob, you've been doing a stupendous job for the last 40 years. This latest report is, again, on an annual basis, crucial to our understanding of exactly how much is coming out of our pockets and being used for a technology that we cannot use, and woe unto us if we do. So, for now, I would like to thank you for the work that you do. And thank you for being my guest this week on Nuclear Hot Seat.
Thank you so much.
Dr. Robert Dodge of Physicians for Social Responsibility, and so much more. We will link to the just released report, Nuclear Weapons Community Cause Program, on our website, NuclearHotSeat.com under this episode, number 774. In support of the PSR Nuclear Weapons Community Cost Program Report, there are two sites by or in collaboration with nuclear historian Alex Wellerstein that you need to know. The first is NukeMap. It is an interactive site that allows you to determine what the impact would be from a nuclear bomb landing in your town. Just put in your location. The size of the nuclear bomb you'd like to find out about is always good to start with either Hiroshima or Nagasaki. Click a few additional prompts, including the number of dead, injured, blast radius, warhead yield, and click detonate. Within a minute, you'll see exactly what that nuke would do to you and your neighbors. Make certain you click on airburst, casualties, and radioactive fallout to get the full impact. And there's a less well-known but just as disturbing accurate presentation from Alex Glazer in collaboration with Alex Wellerstein from 2019. A video simulation called Plan A, which presents a plausible escalating war scenario between the United States and Russia using realistic nuclear force postures, targets, and fatality estimates. It is estimated that there would be more than 90 million people dead and injured within the first few hours of such a conflict. And just to cheer you up further, we'll link to the PSR Nuclear Famine Report. As for the baby tooth study that revealed strontium-90 in baby teeth and led to the founding of International Physicians for the Prevention of Nuclear War, check out Nuclear Hot Seat number 596 from November 22, 2022. That will be another link on the website, nuclearhotseat.com, under this episode, number 774.
Activists, shout out.
Physicist Linda Williams is great at breaking down complex nuclear issues and giving us the bare bones to be able to understand the truth behind all that nuclear industry gobbledygook. Here, she explains the need for comments on three new rule changes the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, or NRC, is proposing, and the tiny, teeny, tiny, minuscule window of opportunity that we have to comment them, as well as why we must comment. I spoke with Linda Williams on April 26, 2026. Linda Williams, it's great to have you here with us on Nuclear Hot Seat.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
You have been writing your little brains out, and there have been some fabulous articles you've created, primarily for Counterpunch. Those are the ones that I have seen. Most recently, you have created a guide to commenting on rules removing public oversight of nuclear reactor safety. Really important for the listenership to know about. Tell us about this.
It's been an onslaught of regulatory change at the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. And that is under the executive order of Trump from last year to get all these changes done by November 2026. So it's like one day after another, these changes are coming through that are very excessively deregulating the NRC's ability to regulate new reactors for safety and environmental impact. So what I've been reporting on is a variety of issues, but what's coming up right now where we can comment is rules removing public oversight of nuclear reactor safety. As your listeners may know, the Department of Energy has granted permission to, half a dozen startup companies who are working on small modular nuclear reactors or SMRs to test their facilities and their reactors under the Department of Energy rather than having to go through the NRC licensing process. So what this new rule is that when they come time to apply for a commercial license, they don't have to go through the NRC for their safety review. The safety review that they obtained from the Department of Energy or the Department of War, formerly the Department of Defense, will work instead. Now, the problem with that is that the safety review and the DOE or the DOW are secret. And if they got a safety approval for a 1 megawatt microreactor or a 10 megawatt microreactor, they'll be able to use that safety review to scale up to 100 megawatts or 1,000 megawatts, which is a gigawatt, or 10 reactors on one site with no public oversight and no public review. That is the most important of all these rules that have come up because it removes the public from oversight. Now, the most important thing about public oversight is that when the public, which means citizens, organizations, lawyers, environmental groups, when they submit comments on the docket of these proposed rules, that forms the basis for legal action. So if you don't submit these comments, then if you try to sue later and say, "Hey, wait a minute, this is impacting the groundwater," they can come back and say, "But you didn't point this out in the comment period. Too bad." It's not a great system, but that's what it is. So it's so critical for people to submit comments. And that's why I made this simple guide to commenting on these rules, even though they're very complicated.
Explain the process of commenting on the rules, because I have to admit, you made it so easy. Once I read them, I did the steps immediately and got it done.
Thank you for submitting comments. So all you have to do is go to the NRC's regulatory site for the rule, which I have linked in the articles, and we'll tell you how to get to those so you can find this information. And what I've created is a statement that you can copy and paste and put in. You can submit anonymously if you prefer, or you can put your name, doesn't matter. And I found this gold mine, which I'm so excited about. And that is comments that have been submitted by a retired 16-year retiree expert in the NRC, Fred Schoeffer. And he submitted testimony that points out all the problems legally with these rules. So what you can do is you can just refer to him. And that's what I have in the template of a comment that you can copy and paste. So, for example, it says, "I oppose interim staff guidance, blah, 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 docket, yada, yada, yada." And then you say, "I incorporate by reference and adopt as my own comments those submitted by Fred Schoeffer." And you can just copy and paste this in. So everything he says goes into what you say. And then you could say what you want if you want to say this is madness and you can't take away public rights to participate in industrial development in their communities. That's what I've been saying lately. Then you can add that in as well. But by commenting and referencing him, you have the totality of his analysis, which is 22 pages long.
We will, of course, link to the places where people can find this information. But for those who want to hear it now and be able to go there immediately, where can they find the article? Where can they find this information?
Counterpunch is a free online journal, and I've been writing pretty much for them lately on these NRC rulings. My name is Linda Williams, Lynda Williams. You can Google search my name plus Counterpunch, and you'll come up with one of the articles. If you click on my name, it shows all the articles, and that's where you'll see this particular article, the latest one.
Is there a specific site that is needing any kind of input from us? And let us know what kind of timeline are we working on here? Is there a deadline or is it open-ended?
Great question. Typically, the NRC rulings give a public comment period of 30 days only. So there's two regulations that are related to this one article that I wrote called A Guide to Commenting on Rules Removing Public Oversight. One is due May 4th, and the second is May 18th. And then there's another ruling about a laser enrichment facility that I also wrote about called Secrets and Shortcuts that you'll see on my author's page. That's an enrichment plant where they use lasers to enrich uranium for a commercial nuclear reactor fuel. And that has a million issues with it. See, Libby, one of the problems is once the Trump administration took over, Doge came in and fired a lot of workers from the NRC, and a lot of people just resigned. 400 people from the NRC are gone in the past year. So they have less people to work on all of this, and they have this forced fake deadline of November 2026 in order to accomplish the directions of the executive order to essentially gut all regulation from the NRC. So there's a lot of mistakes. There are so many mistakes in these rules that especially Fred has pointed out. He submitted testimony also for the PLEF. You can read everybody's comment. That's what's fun too. You know, you can go to the regulatory site and read what other people wrote. That's how I found Fred. So the more that people comment and point out what's wrong, the more they have to pay attention. It's also really important, according to Fred, that there's news stories about it, like coverage what you're doing right now, writing to your newspaper, write letters to the editor. The more press coverage there is, the more the NRC pays attention. And they are required by law to address every concern in the comment before they finalize the rule.
So these comments are not just something we're throwing out in the ozone, hoping somebody who doesn't want to listen is going to listen. There is a legal responsibility for the Nuclear Regulatory Commission to respond to the issues that are being raised. Is that accurate?
That's exactly right. And unfortunately, what they're trying to do is remove public input and oversight. That's exactly the issue of this rule, where they're going to allow the safety aspect of the licensing to happen with the DOE and the DOW because the public can't see it. It's secret. So we don't get to submit comments, and there will be no court power in the future. Also, there's another ruling coming up in the next few weeks, where they're going to try to give a categorical exclusion for all new reactors, so there'll be no environmental review at all.
This sounds like laying the groundwork for absolute disaster. And it sounds like it's coming from people who hate life, hate people who aren't them, and they think they are immune to the consequences of their actions. And when it comes to nuclear, nobody is. I don't care how much of a billionaire you are or how big that missile silo bunker is that you have built for yourself. There will be consequences and they will not be pretty. So it's important for those of us who have even the slightest understanding of how dire this situation is to get online, follow the prompts, copy what you have written and possibly what I will write, and make your voices known on the NRC sites and do it quickly because time is running out for us to be able to have a voice in this.
If I may, here's some bad news and good news. The bad news is that the AI, Silicon Valley, PayPal, Mafia are getting into the nuclear business. So a lot of these companies who are doing this SMRs or enrichment are brand new startups funded by Peter Thiel or Bill Gates. What they're trying to force is the deregulation of nuclear power so they can use nuclear power to power their AI data centers. It's absolutely entwined in that. So it's very serious that people pay attention and share this information with your neighbors and friends. And because it's, we want to make it as easy as possible. I think I have copy, paste, click on the thing, stick it in. You can be anonymous. Now, finally, the good news. Ed Lyman, who you know from the Union of Concerned Scientists, he's a nuclear expert on everything. He has said to the effect, let's see what happens after the billionaires get nuclear absolutely deregulated. There's still no promise that the industry or the financial folks are going to follow, right? So it could be that this will be a bust before it's actually a boom.
Well, Linda, we're going to count on you to help us keep current with this and see if we can have you on a much more regular basis to give us an NRC update or a regulation update, or here's a place where you can express your rage and outrage about nuclear where it can possibly do some good. You can help us learn how to respond, when to respond, what to say in response, so that we can start making our voices known even more than we have so far.
I have a Substack called Nuclear Free Hawaii. If you join that, I will be sending out alerts very infrequently, but when necessary. So if you subscribe, you don't have to pay. I'll send out emails that say, this needs to be, comments are due at the NRC. Here's what you can submit. So it'll be really fast and easy for people to get the information and share. So check out my Substack, Nuclear Free Hawaii.
Linda Williams, it's always a joy. We've had a lot of interaction, a lot of working together through the years. And I want to thank you for your wisdom, your knowledge, your ferocity, your support, and for being my guest once again this week on Nuclear Hot Seat.
Aloha.
The irrepressible physicist, Linda Williams. We'll have links up to her articles, and especially the recent ones, at nuclearfreehawaii.substack.com. Know that Linda and I recently appeared together on WBAI-FM's Ecologic radio program talking about this very issue. We'll have that link up as well as soon as it's available. But within an hour of us getting off the air, access to Linda's Counterpunch article seems to have been blocked, no matter how I tried to bring it up. As soon as we can get that clear, we will have the link up on our website, nuclearhotseat.com, under this episode, number 774. And speaking of blocks, here's
Nuclear Hot Seat, Nuclear Hot Seat, Nuclear Hot Seat, none that's out of the week.
A dedicated listener to and supporter of Nuclear Hot Seat wrote me about a recent interview he caught with former Energy Secretary Ernest Moniz. It was on Lawrence O'Donnell's program, The Last Word, on April 22, 2026. In it, Moniz spoke about Iran not needing 90% uranium enrichment to build a nuclear bomb, saying one could be created with 80% or even 60% enrichment. This is the exact same information covered in much more detail by Dr. Gordon Edwards of the Canadian Coalition for Nuclear Responsibility in our interview on Nuclear Hot Seat number 731 from July 3rd, 2025. But here's the thing. When my friend went to send me a link to the online video of the program, that 8-minute segment with Moniz had been edited out. Why? Online, the length of a program doesn't matter, so it couldn't have been for length. And on cable, the show was the proper length. So what gives? Why edit it down for online posting? And why eliminate that particular bombshell information that Iran already has uranium enriched enough to build a bomb? Could it be censorship? With some effort, my contact was able to uncover an audio podcast of the entire show, and we will have a link up to it on the website, nuclearhotseat.com, under this episode, number 774. In the meantime, why did they do it? Your guess is as good as mine, but it's definitely a boneheaded move that makes you, Lawrence O'Donnell, and your production team at The Last Word, which seems to have edited out the last words, you are all this week's
Nuclear Hot Seat, none that's out of the week.
This has been Nuclear Hot Seat for Tuesday, April 28, 2026. Yes, it's the anniversary of Chernobyl, and if you check our show 2 weeks ago, you'll hear this year's Chernobyl update. Now, if you'd like to get Nuclear Hot Seat delivered via email every week, it's easy. You can sign up for it on your favorite podcast channel, or what we prefer, just go to nuclearhotseat.com. There is a great big honking yellow box for you to put in your first name and an email address. That way, every week, you will get one email with a link to that week's show as soon as it posts and a short description of its content. That way you need never miss a single episode. And audience participation time. If you have a story lead, a hot tip, or a suggestion of someone to interview, send an email to info@nuclearhotseat.com. And remember, if you can, please go to Nuclear Hot Seat and donate. It's the only way we keep going, and I thank you for your support. Any amount will help us out and keep this show going. This episode of Nuclear Hot Seat is copyright 2026, Libby Halevi and Nuclear Hot Seat. All rights reserved, but fair use allowed, as long as you cite the program, website, names of any guest whose comments you use, and me. For now, this is Libby Halevi of Nuclear Hot Seat, reminding you that as Robert Dodge of Physicians for Social Responsibility said,
there is no adequate medical or humanitarian response to a nuclear war. The only way to respond is to abolish these weapons, and we must abolish them before they abolish us.
And there you have it, your weekly nuclear wake-up call. So whatever you do, don't go back to sleep, because we are all in the nuclear hot seat.
Nuclear hot seat. What are those people thinking?
Nuclear hot seat.
What have those boys been drinking?
Nuclear hot seat.
The corium is sinking. Our time to act is shrinking, but our activists are linking. Nuclear hot seat. It's da bomb.